Chapter 18, the seventh question. How do I continuously reinforce this new way of being? Quote, "The mind is indeed restless, Arjuna. It is indeed hard to train. But by constant practice, the mind in truth can be trained. When the mind is not in harmony, this divine communion is hard to attain. But the man whose mind is in harmony attains it, if he knows and if he strives." Unquote. That's Lord Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita. When they're next to each other, the number 1 and the number 8, which is the symbol of infinity, signify one infinite source. I invite the symbolic nature of the number 18 to inspire this final chapter of Excuses Begone, along with the last question of our paradigm shift. In Hebrew, the number 18 signifies life. There are also 18 holes on a golf course, which can't simply be an accident, can it? The Tao Te Ching contains 81 chapters, and many believe that it was contemporaneously written with the Bhagavad Gita, the ancient Hindu holy book that just happens to have 18 chapters. The Bhagavad Gita details the conversation between Krishna, an avatar of the god Vishnu, and the spiritual warrior Prince Arjuna. The quote that opens this chapter comes when Krishna, who is disguised as a charioteer, gives advice to Arjuna as he's preparing to go into another huge battle. Elsewhere in this iconic volume, Krishna instructs, quote, "Give not your love to this transient world of suffering, but give all your love to me. Give me your mind, your heart, all your worship. Long for me always. Live for me always, and you shall always be united with me." Unquote. This is the essential message of Excuses Begone. Unite with God, the Tao, universal mind or source, and trust in this wisdom, which is your original nature. Know your original nature so that you can intuitively turn your awareness away from this transient world when necessary. Then you don't need or want self-defeating habits or excuses. Krishna reminds you that with constant practice, your mind can be trained to overcome any habits of thought. The key is with constant practice, and that's the affirmative answer to this seventh and final question. How do I continuously reinforce this new way of being? Practice the essence of Excuses Begone daily or even hourly, particularly the seven questions comprising the paradigm. When you do, before long, you'll find yourself running those seven questions through your mind in a matter of moments, and you'll come out on the other side of an old habit with a new way of thinking and acting and being. Learning to overcome excuses involves training your mind to become harmonious or at one with your source. As Krishna says above, when the mind is not in harmony, this divine communion is hard to attain, but the man whose mind is in harmony attains it, if he knows and if he strives. Unquote. The remainder of this chapter focuses on suggestions for staying in harmony with your source of being. Thinking like God thinks is essential for all of your practice, not so much to learn new techniques for overcoming excuses, but to keep you consciously connected to source and detached from the material world as much as possible. In this way, you'll let the angelic realm guide you through all of the doors that will now be opening for you. 9 ways to reinforce your new way of being. Throughout this entire program, you've had the opportunity to examine the many ways your mind has learned self-sabotaging thoughts. You learned how those bad habits became a familiar reality system for you, with a catalog of excuses explaining why you abandoned your original nature in favor of edging God out. Now, however, you're freeing yourself of those excuses by training your mind to welcome and cultivate your original spiritual nature. Each of the 7 principles for living an excuse-free life, as well as the 7 components of the new paradigm, are directed toward the message Krishna imparts to Arjuna. When you get your mind into harmony with Source, there will never be a need for bad habits or excuses again. As he states in the Bhagavad Gita, quote, "Even the worst sinner becomes a saint when he loves me with all his heart. This love will soon transform his personality and fill his heart with peace profound. O son of Kunti, this is my promise. Those who love me, they shall never perish. Still your mind in me, still yourself in me, and without doubt you shall be united with me." Unquote. So here are 9 suggestions for uniting with your source and living from that place. Number 1, know it. As Krishna tells Arjuna, your mind can be trained if you know that you and your source cannot be separated. This knowledge is so close, it's only a thought away. Knowing is like having a private room that contains all the answers you need, and only you have the entrance key. Since it's in you, you can go there at any time, and no one can prevent you from what it contains. The moment your sense of knowing dissolves, however, old habits and a ton of excuses inundate you. When you're aligned with your source, you're guided by the greatest good. Without that alignment, your source and guidance don't tend to get involved with the way you choose to live your life. Create your own space where you're aligned with source, then ego and doubt can't enter. Always keep in mind that no single person, place, or thing can force you to believe or disbelieve anything. Perhaps that was true when you were a child, but not now. Now you've got the independence to choose what you believe. Your knowing is yours. Here's how I speak to myself about my own knowing. Quote, "A sacred place is within me that contains a knowing. I go there frequently, and I don't allow doubt into that divine inner dwelling. It's mine and mine alone, and I share it with my source of being. It is to this knowing that I retreat whenever I find myself slipping into excuse habits. In this knowing space within, I have no doubt about the guidance that's available to me when I'm unified with my source. I know that the doors will remain closed and the angelic teachers will not seek me if I'm only attached to this corporeal world of conflict, material things, and judgment. I keep this knowing space sacred for the moments when old habits and excuses attempt to influence my life." Be aware how significant this doubtless knowing is for living an excuse-free life. Number 2. Act as your source would in every instant. From this place of inner knowing where doubt is banished, ask, "What would God do right now?" Or if you conceptualize God as love, ask, "What would love do right now?" If you're ever perplexed by your habitual thoughts, asking this question will serve as a way to reinforce that there's an alternative. When you ask what God or love would do, you attract the source energy that was lost in your voyage from childhood ego development to the present. As I was writing this section, the sound of a chainsaw cutting a cement pole in half permeated my writing space, and my habituated way of thinking began to surface. I felt so resentful toward the noise pollution that I thought about quitting for the rest of the day, with the built-in excuse of, "How can I write with all of this shrieking noise? It's their fault, it's not mine." But I decided to reinforce the excuses begone way of being by asking, "What would God do?" Then I sat down, dismissed my judgmental notions, and let myself be in peace. Within a few moments, I chose to ignore the sound and write anyway, imagining the chainsaw noise as music to accompany me. 5 minutes later, the noise was gone, and I'd sent an excuse packing by being in a God-realized space instead of continuing on with an old, ego-dominated inner dialogue. Number 3. Initiate a conversation with your habitual mind. As you work to overcome your self-created limitations, talk to your subconscious, telling it that instead of reacting, you're now going to respond with conscious choices. This will work rather quickly for you if you're serious about breaking a pattern. Awareness of feeling locked into automatic reactions along with a serious commitment to change will allow you to choose a new response. This is what happened with my 30-year habit of drinking caffeinated diet soda. Until that day in 1985, when I chose to break this habit, I drank 6 to 8 cans of carbonated brown water every day. I'd certainly been living at what I call the reaction level, with excuses to explain and fortify why I did this, so I made a commitment to myself to change. I knew I wanted freedom from the chemicals that dominated my life so much that I was seldom without a can of them in my hand, and this became much more important to me than continuing down my well-trod path. I became vigilant about noticing my subconscious pattern. As soon as I caught myself reaching for a soda, I'd stop myself and substitute a conscious response that aligned with my commitment. By the same token, if you want to break a pattern, you need to truly commit and then start conversing with your habitual mind. You'll be amazed at how fast the excuses disappear. Number 4, get quiet. Decide to reduce the noise level of your life. Noise is a distraction to your highest self because it keeps your ego on red alert. Ways to discard habits along with their attendant excuses are often found in silence, in the void that's the creative source of all form. I've always loved Blaise Pascal's observation on this subject, quote, "I have discovered that all the unhappiness of men arises from one single fact, that they cannot stay quietly in their own chamber," unquote. And this is from a scientist. Another scientist, Albert Einstein, reminds us of the importance of noise reduction as we become more adept at outgrowing the habits of childhood. Quote, "I live in the solitude which is painful in youth, but delicious in the years of maturity," unquote. Adopting a similar attitude will help you reinforce your excuses begone life, so learn to take time each and every day for quiet contemplation. For example, when you're driving alone, turn off the constant chatter bombarding your inner world. Then when you arrive at your destination, honor the off button on the TV remote and honor the on button for your highest self. Try to make meditation a daily practice as well, even if only for a few moments. If you're unsure of how to begin, I've written a book called Getting in the Gap that comes with a CD to guide you in learning the meditation technique of japa, which has been so extraordinarily helpful to me personally. This is how Carl Jung described what he felt in deep meditation. Quote, "Those inner states were so fantastically beautiful that by comparison this world appeared downright ridiculous. It is impossible to convey the beauty and intensity of emotion during those visions. They were the most tremendous things I have ever experienced." Unquote. Finally, while you're in that inner bliss-filled silence, let yourself be willing to simply ask. Just ask. A Course in Miracles points out that you do not ask too much. In fact, you ask too little. And of course, the Bible says, quote, "Ask, and it will be given to you." Unquote. That's Mark 7:7. All creation stems from the void, the great silence. This includes the creation of a new you devoid of self-defeating thinking habits and accompanying excuses. As Swami Sivananda reminded his devotees, silence is the language of God. Ask in silence, listen in silence, and let silence be the jumping-off point for becoming one with the creative force of the universe. Number 5. Re-energize your surroundings. The law of attraction works when you surround yourself with people who are on a spiritual path similar to your own. Remember, this law states that like is attracted to like, so you attract source energy to you by being like it. Similarly, when you're continually in the company of low-energy, angry, depressed, shaming, hateful people, you'll probably find life a little more challenging. It was said of Jesus that when he entered a village, the population would be elevated just by his presence. No one could bring him down. Become more Christ-like yourself by remembering that no one can bring you down because of his or her low energy. If people around you are angry or depressed and you feel drained emotionally, it's your responsibility to allow yourself to create the right energy for you. You don't have to join them in their negativity. Stay in your place of peace, regardless of how tempting it may be to lash out or to argue. Practice Lao Tzu's 4 cardinal virtues and keep your environment as pure and free from negativity as you possibly can. Literally and metaphorically, turn off any medium that broadcasts a litany of reasons to be depressed and frightened. Make your home a temple of kindness and love. Stay away from places that thrive on loud noise or alcohol consumption or smoking and insensitivity. Pay attention to the music you listen to, the art you view, even the arrangement of your furniture and flowers, all of it. The more peaceful and loving your environment and the people in it, the more you're in a serene place where excuses aren't on the agenda. This is the environment in which self-defeating habits are most likely to fade from your consciousness. Further reinforce your new way of being by having your surroundings reflect the design of what you want your life to look like. In this energy, like-minded people will appear. Choose to be in the company of those who hold the space for you to achieve the joy of maximizing rather than minimizing your highest human potential. Number 6. Get back to nature. When I'm on Maui writing, I make it a weekly practice to drive halfway around the island to a lush spot with a stunning waterfall that empties into a refreshing pool where I spend several hours swimming and meditating while the water cascades down on me. In those moments, it feels as if God has entered my consciousness and a rapturous feeling of contentment overwhelms me. This is a ritual I do just before beginning a new chapter, and it reconnects me to my source of inspiration. There's no confusion, no worry, no fear, nothing but pure ecstasy and a lightness of being. In these moments, which I cherish deeply, I receive the answers I seek not only for the writing I know I'll be doing in the next several days, but for my personal life as well. This setting that showcases nature's beauty is pure God in action. As I get quiet and listen, any self-limiting thoughts are simply impossible. I understand what my spiritual friend Thoreau meant when he wrote these words in 1854 explaining why he chose to live in nature at Walden Pond. Quote, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, and when I came to die, discovered that I had not lived." Unquote. You will also find your answers in nature because God is nature, unspoiled, untended, alive in stillness, and teeming with life. When you're there, you'll begin to see the miraculousness of every cubic inch of space. You'll find the presence of an energy that you may have lost touch with in your daily life, and that energy is in you, just as it is in all of the flora and the fauna. The creative spirit of God or Tao is so easy to align with when you're in a natural, unpretentious setting. Just before writing this chapter, I trekked to the waterfall and the natural pool with someone I love, stood in the cool, flowing water, and ate guava fruit hanging from a branch above the surface. In those moments, everything I needed to say solidified. Excuses were out of the question, and I understood what Einstein wrote in his later years, quote, "I lived in solitude in the country and noticed how the monotony of a quiet life stimulates the creative mind," unquote. Number 7. Practice yoga. As I've mentioned earlier in this program, the meaning of the word yoga translates to union. The ancient rishis who gave us yoga considered stretching, balancing, and flexible exercising an opportunity to experience union with God. Such a union with the source of being wasn't a painful experience, since God was viewed as natural, peaceful, and gentle. In our Western world, the most popular exercise regimens involve some degree of harsh, vigorous, punishing, no pain, no gain activity. These include running or jogging, bicycling, aerobics, and weightlifting, particularly on complicated machines to add more muscle tone. Yoga, on the other hand, has no harshness to it. Yet even as you stay in a space the size of a small mat, you attain the same kind of benefit those other physical pursuits give you without the pain or exertion. Yoga is a great workout for the entire body, particularly the joints, muscles, and even internal organs, but especially for the mind. I practiced it almost every day for 4 years, and it's been a great healing factor in overcoming the aches and pains I inherited from 3 decades of daily running and weightlifting, along with the endless stopping and starting that accompanied years of competitive tennis. I once lived with chronic back pain for many, many years before I began my practice of a daily 90-minute class of Bikram hot yoga, and I'm happy to say that I've been pain-free for almost 4 years now. One of the most appealing features of yoga is that it's done in silence. The mind gets to stop all of its chatter and concentrate on union with God through specific asanas that are designed to align the body, mind, and spirit with the source of being. And that's why I included this little pitch for yoga in this program on eliminating excuses and bad thinking habits. This entire work has been about finding a way to reconnect to the Tao in all of our thoughts and actions. When you experience union, you let go of your ego and you no longer rely on excuses. In the 2nd century BC, Patanjali, who is often called the father of yoga, defined it this way, quote, "Yoga is the ability to direct the mind exclusively toward an object and sustain that direction without any distractions. Yoga is the control of the ideas in the mind," unquote. Now this is precisely what an excuses-be-gone approach to life teaches. Control your mind and everything will fall into place. Give yoga an honest 30-day trial. Notice how your body feels better all over and your inclination toward excuses begins to dissipate as well. Number 8. Make your number one relationship be with God. I know that you have many significant and important relationships, certainly the ones you enjoy with your children, parents, spouse, lover, significant other, co-workers, and best friends rate very high in your life. Here in this excuses be gone paradigm, however, I ask you to place your relationship to your source of being at the very top of this list. When this becomes your reality, you intuitively go to the silence within and remember to send your ego to a place where it doesn't interfere with your deliberations. Make your relationship to source your priority even if you declare yourself an atheist. When you go to this place within yourself, you don't need any religious orientation or belief in the supernatural. You needn't see God as a bearded old white man floating around in heaven awaiting your requests. You needn't believe in talking snakes and whales swallowing people and then spitting them out and God's only son being sacrificed by his father in order to save us, or boats with all creatures on board, including insects and dinosaurs, to assuage God's wrath with a flood that covers the earth. While these stories are fine, I have my own opinions on religious tales, as I'm sure you do. Rather, I ask you to think of God or the Tao or divine mind or Krishna or source or any of the 1,000 names for God as love. Even the Bible itself states that, quote, "God is love," unquote, as in 1 John 4, verse 8. And when Carl Jung was asked in an interview if he believed in God, he said these words, which reflect what I want to convey, quote, "I could not say I believe. I know. I have had the experience of being gripped by something stronger than myself, something that people call God," unquote. There's a loving energy in the universe that allows for the creation of all beings. It is a non-being without form or boundaries, and it does nothing while leaving nothing undone. Make this energy your primary relationship, above all others in your life, consulting it before anyone else. Retreat there in silence and listen, and know that this force is outside of you and within you. It's here that you will be guided to change self-defeating excuse patterns. By all means, love your family and everyone else on this planet. Treasure all of your relationships, but first and foremost, make your relationship to your highest self your priority. When you see God simply as love, there will be no room left for excuses and bad habits. You will only be able to give away the love that is your creative essence. I vividly recall reading an essay published in Time magazine by Patty Davis, the daughter of former President Ronald Reagan, describing her long battle with cocaine addiction. She wrote that she'd been clean for 5 years. The desire to take up the old habit was still very pronounced within her. She concluded her commentary by saying that, although the desire was still there and the memory of the euphoric feeling in her brain when she was on the drug was still enticing, she continued to stay away from this debilitating habit because she didn't want to disappoint God by returning to those old ways. This is what it means to make your relationship to God the supreme relationship. It seems that Patty Davis could handle disappointing her parents, her friends, and even herself, since she had done so many, many times. But she just couldn't go back to a state of being that was antithetical to source energy, because her primary relationship in life was now to God. And in all honesty, I must say that this is the reason I personally have never gone back to alcohol. As you can see, old habits disappear much more readily when you make your senior partner number one in your life. That's because your senior partner is pure love, and when you go there first, all that you could ever need is provided for you. And number 9, work the paradigm. I close this chapter with a reminder to work the excuses be gone paradigm whenever and wherever you find yourself stuck in self-defeating thought patterns or behaviors. The paradigm can be applied at any time to any long-standing limitations that you want to change. When you notice that you've employed an excuse, just say these 3 words, work the paradigm. In a matter of moments, the old mental crutches will vanish. You can easily work the paradigm by quickly going through each of the 7 questions and silently responding with short answers. When you notice that any question in the paradigm elicits a response that keeps the old excuse pattern activated, shift your answer so that it aligns with the highest vision that you have for yourself. This is a powerful act of changing the way you've allowed yourself to be conditioned to think. But it only works as long as you are honest and keep what you're doing a private matter between you and the highest part of yourself. I don't feel that there's any need for me to elaborate on the 7 questions we've already looked at in such details. However, I would like to leave you with a brief summation of the essence of the excuses be gone paradigm, with a short response to each of these 7 questions in the paradigm. Number 1, is it true? Answer, probably not. Number 2, where did the excuses come from? Answer, I allowed them. Question number 3, what's the payoff? Answer, I get to avoid risks and stay the same. Question number 4, what would my life look like if I couldn't use these excuses? Answer, I'd be free to be myself. Question, can I create a rational reason to change? Answer, easily. Question number 6, can I access universal cooperation in shedding old habits? Answer, yes, by simply aligning with my source of being. And the last question, number 7, how can I continuously reinforce this new way of being? Answer, by being vigilant and working the paradigm. Correction, if you work the paradigm several times, you'll soon see where you're guiding your life with thoughts that aren't necessarily true. You'll be able to discern where those thoughts came from and what your life would look like without them. And then you create a rational reason to change them by accessing divine guidance through perfect union with your source of being. To be consciously merged into that perfect union with God is a feeling that's difficult to explain, but ego does now take a back seat. You know that you're allowing yourself to be guided by a force that's bigger than you are. Even if you so choose, you can stay infinitely connected to it. In this state of knowingness, excuses become a thing of the past. In 1851, Henry David Thoreau described his boyhood ecstasies in his journal, and his words take me back to my own boyhood ecstasies. I'm ending this very personal program with his observation because it is to those kinds of moments that I urge you to return to as well. Quote, there comes into my mind such an indescribable, infinite, all-absorbing, divine, heavenly pleasure, a sense of elevation and expansion, and I have naught to do with it. I perceive that I am dealt with by superior powers. This is a pleasure, a joy, an existence which I have not procured myself. I speak as a witness on the stand and tell what I have perceived. Unquote. I too perceive that I'm being dealt with by superior powers. I too speak to you as a witness, telling you what I have perceived. I too have felt the all-absorbing, divine sense of elevation that comes from living my life with a minimum of excuses. And as I conclude this labor of love, I wish for you to come to know the heavenly pleasures of living each and every day aligned with your source of being in such a way that you can shout out, excuses, I no longer need you in my life. So be gone.